damn it, David. Making me work on a Sunday. Doesn't he know I have Star Wars card game tournaments with the Blobfish Boys at Nima Outpost on Sundays? But no, him and Immortan Hoof had brunch plans.
Good morning, Ryan. I'll play Star Wars cards with you.
Nah, I didn't bring my cards with me. I was just too cheesed off. Plus, I haven't had a bowel movement in 6 days. Haven't taken a piss either.
What about brunch, then?
Nah, that's okay, Chad. I was just about to eat some of this leftover Taco Bell from like 6 episodes ago. Maybe that'll help me out.
Why ever be loved?
What was that, Chad?
Hey!
Oh shit, a customer. Didn't think anybody was in here. Hi, how you doing today, sir?
Are you Deep Throat too? I need that tape.
Nah, sorry, our porn section blew up in some freak accident.
Oh. Well, sorry to bother you. I was just over by the time portal in the foreign film section.
Hold on. You're saying we have a foreign film section? Weird. Anyways, can I help you find something?
Okay, here's what I'm looking for. Some kind of post-9/11 war on terror, paranoid science fiction. Wait, no. How about an LA neo-noir where everyone is doing drugs and the clues don't make any sense, but like somehow they do? No. I've got it. Here's what I want. I want a sprawling and overly ambitious follow-up to a cult classic debut by a young hotshot director. Okay. And furthermore, I'd like it if it starred a very specific era of SNL alumni, musicians, and why not throw in a professional wrestler who may or may not have gone on to one of the most successful action careers of all time. Do you have anything like that?
Hey, shut up for a second. I got just the thing. Let me just grab this here and some of this thing.
Right. Wait, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'll take this over here.
Why are you...
Let's put this in front of you.
Why are you setting up microphones?
In the not-too-distant future, 4 movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our 4 heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Was that theme music? Wait a second, is this a podcast?
Sure is. I don't think Dave will mind.
Well, okay, but what about the movie?
Oh yeah, Chad, load up Richard Kelly's 2006 film, Southland Tales, why don't ya?
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Affirmative.
Wait, did you say time portal?
I'm going to tell you the story of the journey down the road not taken. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. These are the sordid tales of how it all came crashing down.
This is an epic Los Angeles crime saga.
And you're researching your role?
Yes, it takes place in the near future.
Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted.
You're gonna have to wear a bulletproof vest.
Let's talk about your phone. What's it really about?
Yes.
They're listening. They're watching.
Take him down.
You're not really here.
Don't look so scared, Mr. Santeros. The future is just like you imagine.
Fascist pigs!
I'm a pimp, and pimps don't commit suicide.
There'd be a lot less violence in the world if everyone just got a little more cardio.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video, bringing the art of cinema back to the wasteland, and your local neo-Marxist group. I'm Ryan. Joining me today is our super advanced robo buddy, Chad.
The fourth dimension will collapse upon itself, you stupid bitch.
Thank you, Chad. And this random customer that came through a portal in our foreign film section, Eric.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing today, sir?
Oh, great. It's just great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad. Thanks for, getting on the show to talk some Southland tales. Now, this is some movie, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of movie.
Yeah, it is a movie. It is something. And I'm excited to talk about it because a lot of people don't seem to like this movie, including my fellow employees at the Apocalypse Video. But they're wrong, right?
I think they have a point. There's something wrong with it.
There is something wrong with it.
But I can't really begrudge it for not liking the movie as much as we do. But I think it's great.
It's funny because there was a quote I read in the old days. There was a site called Letterboxd where people reviewed things. And one of the quotes I saw on it, Jay Douglas was a reporter, and he said, "Sometimes interesting is better than good." And I feel like Southland Tales is definitely interesting. And
yeah,
at least. And I think if you just like try to throw it off, like just like, "Oh, that's fucking trash." I don't know. Like,
I think that that fails to appreciate what it's trying for and what it like. It feels like it could and should be, but it probably would be impossible to make.
Yeah. I mean,
that's definitely that's a good quote. Cause, I find myself pretty often like bored with movies that are unassailable classics, like that are totally good and well-made and blah, blah, blah. And like everyone loves them, but it's just like, there's not really anything interesting about it. And so that's something that, that resonates with me.
Yeah. There was a cartoonist, David Reese, and it's not really grotting Southland Tales, but just any movie, is that he says that the best movies are puzzles or dreams. Some movies are just Southland Tales and nothing else.
Well, it's a puzzle and a dream.
It's a puzzle and a dream. Yeah.
It's got it all. There's stuff to figure out. There's weird psychological undercurrents and mysteries to be solved.
Some weird comedy, that might not land for you, but lands for some people.
Or even the fact that it doesn't land is fun, too. Like, there's something about the way the humor is in the movie, like, that's just fun.
Yeah, I think, and you've brought, while we were watching the movie in the store or whatever, you brought it up that you think that some actors in the movie feel like they know what movie they're in and know how to deliver the jokes or the dialogue. It falls flat and some people it doesn't. And so I feel like we need to get into that at least at some point.
Sure. I mean, we could go for it right now.
Well, I've got the rankings. Before we do. Before we get into that, some people probably haven't seen this movie.
No.
It didn't do too well when it came out. I kind of want to talk just some context a little bit. But before we get into that, do you want to try to explain what this movie is about? And if not, I have a pretty good paragraph that I could read if you don't want to take a shot at it, because it's a crazy movie to try to explain. I feel
I could give it a try. And then it's possible that everything I say could not even be what the paragraph says, because there's so many different things going on.
All right, you take a shot first, and then I'll if I feel like I need to, I'll read this this paragraph.
Well, okay. We open on small town in Texas, Abilene, Texas.
Yes.
Some nice family get together, picnic or something. And then it blows up in a nuclear attack. Same with El Paso. Weird. I got to say, as someone who's been to small towns in Texas and El Paso specifically, weird target for terrorists.
I feel like, I don't know. I've been thinking about like why maybe Texas and stuff. And I also had like another little thing. All right. Like, so there's two. I mean, this is kind of jumping in, but there's two nukes that go off right in Texas. OK. And the only other nuclear things that have happened were, two places in, Japan, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, I feel like if I was trying to figure out why Texas, maybe like the terrorist, if there is one, like thought Texas is like the center of the country, you know, the heart of the country kind of thing.
Without doing any research onto like where the city centers are.
Cowboys in Texas. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like this is the middle of the country.
I guess that's got to be it. It's like just centrally located. Like, let's fuck up as much of this country as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. And, even though it's huge. But
yeah. And there's nothing there.
Yeah, there's nothing. And then I was thinking about also, like, this is a post 9/11 movie, and that was, you know, who knows, hundreds of years ago from now. We don't know exactly what time period we're in now, but there was also the Twin Towers and two attacks in the same area. Maybe that's the, am I reaching, you know, if that's maybe what's going
but through. I mean you know, I hate give credit to Al-Qaeda there, but it's, that was a strategic attack on a huge major city hub and like business kind of thing.
Yeah, true. But I'm just saying, I just feel the logic. There's a master and an apprentice, you know.
Sure, it's got to be
the
two
Sith coming to.
Yeah, there's two. Yeah, there's two boxers. There's two. You know, Roland and Ronald.
Oh my
there's pairs.
Oh my god, you're just blowing my mind right now. This movie's amazing.
Something about pairs. We need to get to it.
Oh,
it's
God.
Good so far. Oh,
this is the best. All right, so keep going. So there's explosions in Texas.
Then you get Justin Timberlake narrating three chapters of prequel. The movie essentially is the three, four, five, and six, pretty much. Basically,
it's like the New Hope through Return
exactly,
of the Jedi.
Yeah. But it's all in one movie, and they also cram in all the prequels in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Which honestly might be better if they did it that way with Star Wars.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, that kind of do. That's what the crawl's for, you know, in a way, you know.
Yeah, but that's true.
That's what the Obi-Wan talking about, you know, the Clone Wars. That's all you need is that type of stuff, really.
Oh, yeah. But we don't need to litigate that again.
They're setting the stage. Go ahead.
So yeah, those are crammed in. A lot of the imagery in that part is stuff from the graphic novel. And you know, there's stuff about how they're closing borders between states. There's like all this crazy like conservatism going on. This guy Frost is running for president, and basically we end up with, there's a movie star who was lost in the desert and has now been convinced by a porn star that he wrote a screenplay called The Power.
Yeah.
And The Power ends up being it ends up being this very prophetic thing that's like sort of tells a lot of the events of the movie and like themes that happen, and basically like it just ends up being this like document for how the movie plays out. People ask him like,
well, he writes
how does it end
with his girlfriend, right? He writes it with his girlfriend, and she's supposed to be psychic, right? Crystal now.
Oh, I don't know about that. She did so she wrote the screen. This is a graphic novel thing. She wrote the screenplay and found Boxer basically like someone brought him to her from the desert. And she convinced him that they wrote it together, but really she just wrote it.
Okay, yeah. So I thought like she's like predicted almost all this. It's kind of the idea like almost her writing the script, and this is all not in the movie really. So that's what's crazy about this. It's all she almost like writes this movie as a like you said, like a prophecy kind of thing. It almost becomes a point where are they living the movie or are they not? Kind of thing is happening. In a way, right?
Yeah. And there's sort of some mix ups with that, like where things seep into the real world from the screenplay. Like there's the I was just going to go into a whole other thing about the employee at US Ident, which may be worth setting up before I go into that.
Well, we'll get it. I feel we don't have to like go beat by beat. I just kind of want to feel like,
it feels like every time you like start to explain something, you have to like go back six steps to like get to where that starts.
Yeah. Well, let me just read this, because this is just, I feel like
All right. Okay,
this is like
that'll
before
be faster.
We, I feel like this will be better because, like, we're just not. I feel like, yeah, we're just going to go off in these tangents if we try to explain it. So, this is Chad just printed this off for me. It's from Vice.com, and it was basically an article that said that Richard Kelly's Southland Tales was exactly 10 years ahead of its time. And he has, in the middle of this article, has a little synopsis. And this, I was going to read this verbatim. So, it said, providing a synopsis of Southland Tales may well be a fool's errand. So, that's kind of what I feel like you were.
I just participated in a heavy fool's errand. Yeah, he's right.
And then the story almost doesn't even matter except to tie together a string of absurdities. It's 2008, the near future. The U.S. has been rocked by a nuclear attack, and World War III has intensified everything about the Bush-era war on terror and post-9/11 security state. Dwayne Johnson's Boxer Santeros, an action star with ties to the Republican Party, mysteriously wakes up in the California desert with amnesia. Former porn star Crystal Now, Sarah Michelle Gellar, seems to be manipulating Boxer as the two work on a screenplay about the coming apocalypse, drawn with their own shared premonitions. Thrown in racist cops, mind-altering drug testing on American soldiers, a neo-Marxist resistance movement, and a rift in the space-time continuum, and you've got an incoherent mess of political allegories fighting with one another for a little over 2 hours.
Woo.
That's it, right? Okay.
yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. So, that's it. Southland Tales, man. It's a crazy movie. And I mean, I guess just to get off the bat, like, I saw this movie when it came out, and I rewatched it recently, and I feel like it's like there's so many things I like about it, and Love and Peace needs to get together. I don't necessarily think everything does come to. It's like almost like the puzzle pieces look like they should match up, but they don't.
Yeah,
you know, kind of thing.
I think that's definitely a knock against it, where it's sort of just like a scattershot without any real like focus to it or ending. Well, really,
I feel like, in my opinion, I think halfway through the movie is when it kind of loses it. I think it almost has it. I think there's just a point in the movie when I think the movie kind of loses it and doesn't quite ever come back together. For me, it's when like Sean William Scott runs into, and he's a cop. Basically, in this point in the movie, we think he's twin brothers with somebody, and the neo-Marxist group is using him to manipulate Boxer, right? Kind of thing. And the other one is knocked out. Is that kind of the idea?
They're trying to incriminate Boxer. So, like, they want to get a tape of Boxer hanging out with hanging out with racist cops and like being involved in a shooting, a police shooting, pretty much.
It's so crazy. This is 2007 when this came out, or was it 2008?
Somewhere around there.
What the hell? It just seems like 2006. Still 2006, 2007. It was Cannes at 2006, 2007 was the US release. And
oh, I'd love to see that can cut.
Yeah, me too. But I feel like it's like it seems so relevant when you're just explaining what the hell is going on, or at least relevant to 2019. And is that where you came from, by the way? Do you know what you? I don't know. Oh, never mind. All right.
I came from the foreign film section.
Oh, that's true. That's right. It's right. So I feel like the movie kind of loses it for me, at least. Like, I'm kind of having, this is where I started, like, stop tracking it. And is when Sean William Scott kind of runs into that kind of like gangster guy with the Hummer kind of thing, to, like, stops him from like committing suicide. And I kind of, this is one of my things.
Yeah, that character, I feel like, is maybe the weak. I feel like there was supposed to be more with that guy or something. Yeah, like,
I think
like
so.
Any kind of connection, but he sort of just, yeah, he shows up to Justin Timberlake, buys drugs, finds out he's getting drafted, wants to kill himself, and then just goes off on an adventure with Sean William Scott.
And I feel like at that point too that we miss something with Sean William Scott as well. But maybe you can try to like fill in the gaps. But there's just a point where I feel like I get lost.
Yeah, one of them was at the neo-Marxist headquarters. I think the real one. So there's two Sean William Scotts because he got sent through a a time rift, and
that's kind of like the climax that you find out that both Sean William Scott and Boxer, The Rock, were like duplicated because they went through time, basically.
Yeah, right? 69 minutes back in time.
69.
Nice. which, by the way, the 69 thing, there's a lot of things that tie into that number, which is something I really like.
Oh, shit.
There's like, that's one of the funniest and like most interesting things to me. Anyway, we'll go back to that. But yeah, so there ends up being two of each of those guys. One of the boxers gets destroyed by a missile or something. But both Sean William Scott's are out and about. So one of them is at the like neo-Marxist headquarters. That place gets raided. He jumps out the window, lands in a dumpster. Other one witnesses the shooting with The Rock.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be like a fake shooting, like a setup, but it ended up being real because
ended up being real.
John Lovitz shows up like and
right.
kills him. He's actually like an asshole cop, you know?
Yeah, so. But not even because he was fake too, but...
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot. It's just so many...
It ends up Sherry O'Terry's pulling all the strings for even above that. And so she finds Sean William Scott, the second one, in the car after the shooting. She pushes him out onto the street. And then... eventually he goes and finds this gangster guy. That's where we left off.
Yeah. And I think for some reason, like the scene where they meet up and they're like stealing the ATM, like we're gonna take it to Mexico. Like that never really does anything. Like I don't really.
Yeah, and I don't know why they decided to do that.
Yeah. And I feel like that's just that's like the first thread that comes off for me. And yeah. I'm trying to,
I feel, yeah. I don't know. I feel like honestly you could cut a lot of the stuff with that guy. Like either make his character more like impactful to the story or just cut him out entirely. Cause it ends up he's the guy with the rocket launcher that destroys the mega zeppelin, but like why? Yeah. He's in it for like 15 minutes. Yeah, there's a mega zeppelin.
This whole episode is gonna be like this. It's crazy. All right. I feel like we're getting a little bit in the weeds. I wanted to talk a little bit about
get us out of the weeds.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Richard Kelly a little bit because
mm-hmm.
his kind of career is interesting and how it kind of stopped after this. I mean, after one more movie after this, basically. So Donnie Darko was his first big hit kind of thing. He was like in his 20s, I think, when Donnie Darko must have came out.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so like he's this young guy that makes this movie and I don't know how he gets his casts, you know, kind of thing, because even Donnie Darko has like a crazy good cast.
Yeah,
you know,
and a bunch of people who went on to be like Seth Rogen's huge. In there for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And like, you know, it's like the Gyllenhaals. Uh-huh. You got Patrick Swayze. I knew Drew Barrymore. She produced it or was one of the producers on it.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
She's in the movie, too. A lot of people that are in this movie are also in Donnie Darko. But
yeah, I noticed. Clicking through like Letterboxd and stuff on these actors, I noticed that when you click on some of them, there's like four or five actors in this huge cast. And if you click on them, there are like top three ones are Donnie Darko, Southland Tales, and The Box. So it's just like people he likes to use. Like the guy that plays Frost is like, he's Donnie Darko's dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's kind of like funny because it came out in 2001, like right after 9/11. Going back to 9/11 here, like this is in his movie, it was affected by like it didn't do well in the US. It kind of gained steam in Europe. Like it made like the cover of the Tears for Fears song, the Mad World. It like became number one hit because of Donnie Darko in Europe, basically.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like 2001 might have been it might have been too soon for a movie revolving around like a plane crashing into a house.
Yeah, that's basically what they say. But it eventually like kind of caught on. Like I think it started playing like midnight showings kind of thing. It's almost like a cult hit, you know, like the definition of a cult classic, basically. And I probably discovered it. I remember like friends in maybe junior high. Because I would have been in 2001, I would have been like in seventh or eighth grade. So I probably discovered it like ninth or 10th grade. Like someone like had it downloaded off Kazaa or something or like that. And it literally I was in the weeds with that movie. Like, I was like on the websites about it, like Cellar Door. Does that mean anything to you? Cellar Door?
No.
Supposedly it's like say in the movie, like there's a writer that said it's the most beautiful word in the
I thought you meant like a web. Yeah. Yeah. You're saying it's like a website where people talked about movies back in the 2000s.
There was like a Donnie Darko website called Cellar Door I would like frequent, basically.
Okay. So it's both.
And like learn every single thing about it and how the time travel worked in it. And what does this mean? What is that? And especially for like being a teenager, like this is like junior high, early high school. Like I was just all about it. Like I just loved it. And and also like introduced me to like the music I still listen to today. Like I don't think I listened to 80s new wave and post-punk until Donnie Darko, basically.
Wow, and that's like all you listen to now.
That's all I listen to now, still. Like, ever since, like, you know, I probably grew up and heard, like, everything, Everybody Wants to Rule the World and Shout from Tears for Fears.
Sure.
But then he has that damn Head Over Heels, like, kind of like a deeper cut, and it's like, oh my god, it's my favorite song of all time. Like, it's like... Like, and it's like this amazing like oneer. And so like as a kid and you, as someone that wants to be a filmmaker, wanted to be a filmmaker, you're like, this is like my role model, you know, like putting all this shit in, and it's all things he likes. You can tell like the actors he has in there and the music, and some people can call that pretentious or something. But to me, it's like, this guy just wants to share his love of like shit, like, you know, and stuff like that. And I feel like that's what plays into this movie with all the actor choices that are in it.
I feel like the actor choices in this one, I don't feel as like as curated. I don't know. Like, I don't feel like anyone at that time was like, let's make The Rock the star of the movie. Like, besides, I don't know. Besides like, well, executives who are like, he's the biggest thing. It was wrestler. Like, yeah, because it's just after Scorpion King, right?
Yeah, and Scorpion King. And Scorpion King was like a big hit. Like, they didn't think it was going to be.
Yeah.
And The Mummy Returns. And it was like this. And so it's crazy to think like The Rock has become so huge and stuff. Because it seems like a movie that would come out. Like, if some crazy director wanted to put him in some kind of crazy satire today. Like, no, it would be The Rock or something. But I don't know. It's nuts. But anyway, like, I thought. Shit, was that a dog over by the foreign film section?
I wouldn't worry about that.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, getting back to it, I guess, did you have any kind of experience with Donnie Darko? When did you see it?
I think it was like my early 20s, maybe I saw it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I saw it maybe a few years later, but that's about it with that one. That's when I do want to revisit, just because of my newfound love for this one.
It's like a perfect movie for like a teenage boy to like, or girl, whoever it is, like just to dive into. Cause it's like one of those first movies you feel like you're like, I need to understand this kind of thing.
Right. But like, there's so much more to unpack here. I just want to get into it.
Yeah. And it's sometimes people think, you know, don't want to deal with it, but that movie's funny and the music's great and it's shot well and there's good actors in it. So it's like,
I think less people write that one off, obviously. Yeah, like that's, yeah. That one has more of a genuine following, and there's no like, I feel like there's not as much of a like, man, that movie sucks, huh? Kind of like thing to it.
Well, so anyway, he makes this movie. The film later ended up on Empire Magazine's 50 Greatest Independent Films of All Time, and it was number 2.
Whoa.
And can you guess what number 1 was?
I would guess either... like probably Reservoir Dogs or Sex,
ding,
Lies,
ding,
and
ding,
Videotape.
Ding, ding. You got it. Yeah, and then also this is an interesting quote by someone that, you know, may have lost a little bit of cred, but I kind of like the quote. It said, in 2016, filmmaker Kevin Smith said of Kelly, he is insanely creative, not unlike Christopher Nolan, but Nolan wound up in the Warner Brothers system where he got special handling and he got a lot of money to make huge art films like Inception. Richard can be one of our greatest filmmakers. He is right now, and someone needs to Nolan that kid.
So, Kevin Smith. I guess they are sort of similar, but Richard Kelly always seems to have more of a comedic element to it.
Yeah, for sure. And because... like, Southland Tales, it was a huge disaster, but, like, it only cost $17 million, and it seems like it's, like, a more than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would have guessed way higher than that.
$17 million, which is relatively like low budget for what this movie is, I feel like.
Yeah.
And some effects look like shit, some look good, but like it's like I don't know. Yeah. With like you wouldn't be able to pay like The Rock that much, you know, today.
You don't even you don't get a quarter of this cast for that amount of money.
Yeah. So I think that's just interesting. So when this movie came out, I was like, I need to see it like opening weekend. Like when so I was just like on board because I was like,
So this was like in the line of your Donnie Darko passion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm like, I'm there. I'm a fucking Kelly stan. I have a picture of Richard Kelly on my MySpace. I am going to see this movie. Like, I am so excited to see this fucking movie. It's like,
what's more 2007 than that?
I know, honestly. And so I'm just like, this is gonna be the shit. And I went with my friend David Baragio, and it was playing in one theater in Phoenix, Arizona, and it was at the Chandler Mall. It was like the only theater playing it. And so I was like, that's strange. It didn't actually get that big of a release, but we went to see it. And I remember there wasn't many people in the theater. The movie only made about 370,000 at the box office. So there wasn't many people there.
Oh, no.
Didn't even crack a million. So
imagine a movie by The Rock not cracking a million.
Right? Yeah. This movie would make like at least 100 today, or even people are like, that fucking sucked, but it at least made some money.
Yeah, right. Just even exactly as it is, like, yeah, it's got The Rock, let's check it out, bring the whole family.
It would make that opening weekend. It would make it's so at least like a double the budget, because like I think like one of the last like at least from my memory, I don't know how many more Fast and the Furious movies The Rock made after 2019, but I know that like Skyscraper didn't do too well, but it did way better than Southland Tales did. But it there wasn't many people in the theater, and definitely people walked out during the movie for sure.
I bet.
And I remember being like, me and my buddy, like, just kind of walking out of there so confused. Like, we were just like, we just didn't know what to think about it. Like, we didn't want to say we hated it. But I remember we sat in a Chipotle afterwards, and I was kind of like trying to piece things together.
Just
and
like I was staring at each other like,
yeah, I don't know. We're just like eating burrito bowls, or I was probably eating a burrito, trying to figure the movie out. And like some things started clicking kind of with me a little bit, and some things didn't. We were just trying to talk it out, and then all of a sudden, like, we went like, is this the best movie ever made? Like, we just kind of like we were so like ridiculous. Like, we were just kind of like, that was either the worst or best movie ever made.
It's
like,
gotta be one of the two. Yeah.
Yeah.
And real quick, do you remember any like points in the movie where people walked out?
I can't, because damn, that's...
I would guess the car commercial.
Yeah, I think that probably was it. I bet you that was a point. I think there might have been people bringing their kids, because it was The Rock. Like, even at that point, people like... I remember there being young people being taken out of the movie. And it might have been the damn pussy muffler of the cars having sex or something.
So graphic.
It's so crazy. I didn't see that movie. I was like almost scared to watch this movie again after that, because I had such good fond memories of it, even though I was so like confused. And I don't think I saw it until now. And so it's interesting, because it seems like in the last couple of years, or not in the last couple, but like around the time of 2019 or so, or like in like this in the Trump era, before the fallout of Mankind happened, it seemed like the even though people were kind of like sick of like Bush bashing when this came out, now I feel like people are like, it's kind of like almost predicting stuff, or it's like I don't know, it's like funnier now for some reason.
Yeah,
than I think it was.
Yeah, like I only saw it recently, so I've sort of only ever viewed it in that lens. I don't know. Something I thought was interesting was, you were saying you bought the Blu-ray when we were watching the movie a little bit ago. You said you had bought the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
like a few months ago and just had it sitting around. So, and it sounded like you were afraid to watch it.
It was sitting on my coffee table, staring at it in the face, like, I'm going to watch you and it's going to be, and I can't wait. But I just was like scared. I don't know. Also, it's a long movie, so you have to commit a lot of time.
That's true.
One thing I did write down, though, during this screening, I was kind of trying to figure out, like, what does this movie remind me of kind of thing? This is without, like, looking at, like, think pieces about it, like, years later. But I wrote down, like, a handful of, like, movies and TV and stuff that just, like, what this movie, just to give, like, people an idea of, like, what this movie kind of feels like a little
bit.
I have written down South Park, kind of like the absurdness that happens and, like, the escalation of stuff.
I can see that.
Another thing I have is Kevin Smith's Dogma, I feel like is a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mike Judge's Idiocracy is kind of like, I feel like a movie that's a similar vibe. Of course, RoboCop, because this movie has like kind of tries the RoboCop and Starship Troopers thing.
Starship Trooper is more, I think. It definitely has that like, do you want to know more kind of vibe, like especially in that beginning part.
Yeah, I feel like in this movie, it's a little bit... maybe it's a little bit too much, or they go on for a little bit longer.
Yeah, it goes on for a long time, and it looks way worse than Starship Troopers did, and it's like doesn't make any sense, and it's and it's very plot heavy, whereas in Starship Troopers it's more like
world building
kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. JT, Justin Timberlake, in this movie, he's all over those screens, and I'm kind of questioning like why him, like why is he all over these screens?
I don't know. He's so to go into some of the graphic novel stuff, he was this this very like pretty famous actor who everyone loved. And then he ended up getting drafted into like the Iraq War or something. And so and then he like I think it references like that Elvis went to war or whatever. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to go.
Wow.
And he does. And so there's a lot with him in that. So he's like this, and he eventually in the war, he gets that scar on his face because him and Roland, Sean William Scott, had they were like friends in war.
They're friends. For some reason, I was thinking that they were brothers.
Like, no, they were like really good friends during the war.
Okay.
And then they both went to... I think they called him like the dungeon master or something, but it's Kevin Smith's character, like the guy with the beard.
Okay.
It was doing these like military experiments involving liquid karma or fluid karma, whichever one the drug is. I forget if it's fluid or liquid, the drug.
Okay. So there's a drug going around that we didn't even talk about that. But one of the main things that's kind of happening under the skin in this is like there's a company that's like making powered using the waves of the ocean, using that to power stuff. And it's also
so that's called that's liquid karma. And then it creates this byproduct called fluid karma, which is a drug that people can take.
And was that being tested on military people?
Yeah. So they were Kevin Smith was involved in dispersing these drugs on to make like super soldiers or like hyper focused or something.
Okay.
They had like three different types. It was like red, yellow, and blue or something.
And so it's one of the things that like since like they're launching fluid karma, the kind of machine that's going to power planes and shit from using the ocean, is that causing everybody like on Earth or like at least in Southland to get high from fluid from liquid karma or something?
I think they're harvesting that. I think the reason that everyone is acting crazy, I think, and that everything's going wrong is because it's also a byproduct of this liquid karma thing. For some reason, being out there in the waves and whatever it's doing, creating power, is slowing down the rotation of the Earth.
Yeah, that's another thing. and that's causing rifts in time, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. It's like by 0.000.
This movie's crazy.
I can't remember what the percent is. I want to say 0.00069 or something percent.
It might be, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's there. I thought maybe for some reason, like it's causing like the drug that these guys are injecting into themselves is maybe like in the air, and that's like causing everyone to kind of be nuts. But I guess not.
I think it's a separate byproduct of the same thing.
Okay.
Anyway, so in the war, after they're like become like super hyper focused soldier. Oh, I think part of what it is they can like communicate telepathically, maybe
with the drug or something.
Yeah. So wow. They're like airdropping into this place. Justin Timberlake's very scared, and Roland gives him his iPod, and he's like, "Here, put it on a song. It'll make you feel better. And then when you land, we'll you know do the war." And the song that's playing, do you want to guess?
It's Killers, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
What's the song called? It's
I forget what it's called, but it's I got soul, but I'm not a soldier. It's the main hook of the song.
That's a good song. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like that song should come back around. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's when has that musical number, that's sort of the payoff of using that song in the graphic novel.
Yeah, but it doesn't really have a setup, though, in the movie, though.
It would have been nice if they were able to do that, but it seems like the ambition really got away from him.
Yeah, like, not even referencing it or something. Like, him, like, saying, like, why isn't that referenced, like, I was in the war and this guy? I don't know. It's supposed to, like, cause a question of, like, if they're related. Like, there was, like, a thing where... Basically, there's a point where Sean William Scott is like, I need to find my brother. And my thinking was maybe he doesn't know that there's a split, like he's two people. And maybe like Justin Timberlake is his brother. That's what I kind of thought at the end.
No, the split is also Sean William Scott. There's just two of them. Mm-hmm.
Well, I knew that. I just was like thinking maybe.
Oh, right.
Like it was a separate thing where he was like, was not referencing his split. He was referencing Justin Timberlake when he was talking about trying to find his brother, was one of my thinkings. But
yeah.
Why is Sean William Scott's shirt bloody? Do you know? Was that talked about?
Justin Timberlake's shirt?
Yeah. is that from the drugs? Or what is that?
I think if you really want to read into it, it's sort of like it's him reliving that experience. Oh, so when he was listening to that song, that's when he was hit with like shrapnel from friendly fire by Roland.
Oh, wow. So they talk about friendly fire.
Yeah. So that's why he has that crazy scar.
Okay. Cause that's like shrapnel, he's bleeding under his skin, shirt almost is what that looks like.
If you really want to read into it, it could be like that. But I saw this interview with Richard Kelly where he was just saying like they rehearsed that dance number a few times and they were like, okay, this is good, but it's like, it's missing something. And so he just grabbed some fake blood and wiped it on his shirt. That's the explanation from the guy himself.
Oh God, that's it.
Oh, wow. I just thought it would look cool, haunted or something. I don't know.
It does. It's a weird sequence. I think that's when me and my buddy like turned to each other in the movie and we're like, what is this?
What
movie
is happening?
Like, yeah. But I don't know. It's kind of cool. It's like a cool little music video in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, it's great. And I love that they get Justin Timberlake, who is famous for singing.
Yeah, like a great singer.
And then they're just like, yeah, lip sync to a Killer song.
And he could probably sing the Killer song still.
Yeah,
right?
you could sing it too, but nope, it's Brandon Flowers.
Yeah, so weird. So weird.
Love it. That's like speaking of Justin Timberlake, he's maybe the lowest on my power rankings of like getting the tone of the movie.
You think he's maybe going a little too serious, I think.
Yeah. I think it's very like I don't know, he'll be like Revelations 9 or whatever. Like he's just very serious and like I guess he is tasked with a lot of the more like serious lines. Like he has to, he has to say that, the poems, the Robert Frost and T.S. Eliot poems a few times, like lines from that and stuff from the Bible. So he is getting like heavier dialogue than a lot of the people.
But yeah, he's supposed to be like the spine of the movie though. And I feel like with him, you're kind of like, I don't know. I like him, but I know what you mean.
I just wish like I know Justin Timberlake can be fun, Like, yeah. You know, like just a few years later in Social Network, like that was a serious movie and he was still essentially a serious character. But
yeah,
he,
but
was,
he was
like
also
fun
like the fun
it.
Character. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, him, especially being this cast is so SNL heavy. And he's like for a while there was sort of like, you know, a featured member almost on that SNL.
Yeah. Yeah, not, yeah, that was later, I think, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a lot later, but it's still like, I feel like this movie kind of set up a lot of things. It's really, I don't know.
it's like the script to The Power.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so that was what that got off from my RoboCop.
We're talking about that. It is very Verhoeven, though. I appreciate that influence of it because I love him.
Yeah, it's not quite. I mean, the thing is, people have kind of said that maybe this movie is a little too on the nose, and maybe it is in some capacities, and Verhoeven's aren't really. Like, it's the thing with RoboCop and those movies is, like, they work for, you know, somebody just wants a stupid action movie and somebody that wants kind of, like, a smart satire, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if this movie quite does that. It's trying to.
The main argument you can make against this movie is he bit off more than he could chew.
Oh,
so
for sure.
I think if it was a tighter story or whatever, then he could have maybe weaved that in a little more naturally. But
it's a little too much for sure. It's still crazy. It's still interesting.
It's interesting. One guy said.
Yeah. The other things I have is Mel Brooks, a little bit of Mel. I don't know. For some reason, I was thinking of Mel Brooks a little bit. And for some reason, just kind of like, this is what it was.
Okay.
So there's a moment in the movie, Crystal Now, Sarah Michelle Gellar's character, is like walking through a crowd and is someone's like filming her. And she says something along the lines of like, I wanted like a real Steadicam, like in the movies or something like that. Like. And then it does like a wide shot and you see the Steadicam operator with a legit Hollywood Steadicam walking with her. But then it cuts to a guy with like a handheld camera. And that to me, I was like that this movie just kind of broke its fourth wall. I guess Mel Brooks movie would because that guy doesn't show up again. It's like it's almost like it's showing that it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's like when Blazing Saddles breaks through Dom DeLuise's set or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure like I'm guaranteeing they weren't like thinking like people won't notice this guy in the crowd because it's literally like she mentions a Steadicam like in the movies and then it shows a guy with a fucking $10,000 Steadicam walking through the crowd. And I'm like, oh, my God, did they just literally do that? And like maybe there's other moments like that in the movie, but that was the one that stuck out to me. Yeah. And that's when all of a sudden I thought of friggin' Blazing Saddles and like like something in Spaceballs when like the stunt doubles like jump through or like the characters jump through the door.
Oh, yeah,
and they're
and
it's our stunt doubles.
The princess is like a guy with a beard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a moment like that. I was like, I can't believe this movie did that too. Why is maybe you're doing a little bit too much, Richard. Come on.
No like, way. Not enough.
I mean, I love it.
Should have been longer.
It's like, yeah, it should have been. that's something we didn't say is that the movie premiered at Cannes and was booed like basically like crazy and like Richard Eber Robert said like it's the worst like one of the worst give it a one star or something like that and then he said that the release one that came out in theaters was worse than the director's but there were some people like on Rotten Tomatoes it has like a 36-40% and to me that feels high for its reputation, doesn't it?
I think that because there are enough people that probably see what we see in it and like see the beauty and the ambition and the sprawl of it. I think it's not because it's definitely not like clearly just like shit, like didn't know what he was doing, making a bad movie because he doesn't know how to make a better movie.
I think he wanted to make a good movie. Like, he wanted it to be good.
You know, I think he wanted to make a great movie, but ended up making a good movie, in my opinion.
It's something. Okay, let me just get through these other two real quick, just because like we can move on to something else. So, of course, which is probably this is probably one that's sort of referenced a lot for this when I realized it was when I was reading through stuff, but I typed in Magnolia. This movie kind of has a Magnolia vibe to it, just with like the multiple stories happening and all that kind of vibe. And then the last thing I have on here, I think you might appreciate this if you can guess, if we're on the same, where I feel like we're on a wavelengths here, like we're connected a little bit. In, with
this one. I don't know.
If I, my last movie listed on here, if you could take a random guess,
jeez,
I'm just curious. You,
I don't know. Give me a hint.
Just like, just try to look into my mind right now. Just like, you know, just like us, me and you are like Sean William Scott right now, like touching hands or whatever.
I don't, Under the Silver Lake?
Spring Break.
Oh, interesting. I don't know if I would have thought that.
Spring Breakers, baby. Uh-huh. No?
I think obviously it similarly appeals to people like us. I don't know if it's specifically like the things about the movie, but I guess there's something there that we both like those.
I think no one else does. It's just the vibe. Like, just like feeling it. Like, feeling like what the hell is going on. In like, and I was thinking of like, while, especially for the first half of this movie, like, I wasn't really trying to figure it out. I was almost just like, yeah, riding this wave, ride with the wave. It, in a way, and just kind of like feeling it out. And then there was just, like I said, there was that point in the movie where I, like, and it's that damn ATM machine where it kind of like, I hit a wall. I was like, right. I was like flying high. I was on the damn, Liquid Karma or whatever. I was singing to some killers. And then all of a sudden I hit that wall with that damn ATM machine. Yeah, I don't know. That's what Spring Breakers is and stuff. And so I don't know. So you recently watched this movie. I guess I've kind of unloaded my fucking history and like thoughts about this movie, at least for a little bit. So like when you first saw it, what were your kind of like, I don't know, how did you take this movie in, I guess?
It's hard to say. I guess to break the bit of this world, I watched it with Dave and Nick.
So some other guys, you know,
Dave and these guys
from the store.
And we were just hanging out. We did, I think a guy that works here, also named Mike, had recently seen it and was sort of talking about it in this disparaging way. Like, what the hell is this? Like, why does this exist? This is stupid and crazy.
Like during the movie?
And this was before. This was sort of like, this was the lead up to us watching the movie.
Okay.
And so we're like, we just got to watch this thing. Like, the stuff that he's saying sounds so insane that it's like, I got to just see it for myself. And I was sort of already maybe in some small way, like just decided, like, I'm going to like this. I'm just going for it. I think it's going to be fun to like this.
It is a fun movie to like, you know, I don't know.
All the stuff that you hear about it is like, a lot of the positive reviews anyway, like compared it sort of to Kurt Vonnegut or like Philip K. Dick, like these sci-fi novelists that I really like that sort of have a very satirical, comical edge along with the sci-fi concepts.
Yeah.
Which is sort of my favorite shit. Like Vonnegut's my favorite author by far. So I was just like, I'm interested in that. Like, it doesn't seem like it could be bad if it's like that. But it could be taken as bad for someone who's not looking for that in a movie. Like if you're looking for just, I guess I don't know what you'd be looking for. Mystery, LA mystery.
Yeah. I guess like a sci-fi
like
mystery.
What would you want from this movie if you don't like it?
I think if it maybe had half the characters to follow, and half the plot lines and like different little connections, which is just crazy that it's still a lot with half of them. I feel like,
yeah, there's a lot going on.
It'd be easier to connect the dots and make the puzzle pieces fit more together,
yeah,
or something.
I guess that's true.
I feel like, and maybe that's the only thing I can think of, like that's the only way I can think of a way to make it better, I guess, but like
tighten it up. Know.
If it's tightened up, but I don't know, it's to me, it wouldn't be the same movie. And it's so weird and interesting to kind of like try to like make sense of it that I don't really want that. But I don't know. I get it. I get why that would be a hard thing to watch. But
right.
And you've mentioned before that you feel like this movie would have been better received if it was maybe like a miniseries or like a TV show or something. Right.
Yeah. If it had come out in sort of that streaming era of like, you know, Man in the High Castle or whatever,
like
being made as an Amazon show.
Stuff.
Yeah. Leftovers. Like it seems very much like it's not based on anything, but it feels like something that's based on like this crazy, unadaptable novel that people are just like, oh, I'd love to see that made as a show. Watchmen. But like, how would they do it kind of thing? But then yeah. it's just like it's formed as that as a movie from the start. So yeah. I think as a like if I popped that on from like Hulu, I'd be like, damn, this rocks.
I feel like yeah, everyone would. I think a lot of people would. I think a lot of people would be like, this movie's it's fucking weird, this shit thing, but it's like interesting and you'd be able to kind of lay out like maybe like an episode's about a character and kind of follows them kind of thing. And I think you're on something with that. Like
that would be a good way to hint. And then you could also like you could obviously spend more time on the prequel stuff, like all the setup to where mm-hmm. the story begins.
Or it could be used as like a Lost styles, like flashbacks or something to like fill in gaps or something.
Yeah, and you could sort of base episodes around characters or whatever. Like, I think it could be. I mean, I'm very excited just to think about that that reality, like that as a thing, which obviously will never happen. But you know,
yeah, it
could be cool.
I think you're right. Like, I thought about that too after I was done. I was like, you're right. Like, it would have been a show with like these, even with in those days of like this the TV revolution before the 20s, basically. Mm-hmm. it was sort of like a thing where like it wasn't you weren't slumming it anymore if you're like a big actor in a TV show. Mm-hmm. So like there would probably even be bigger actors in that show, you know, that doesn't exist, you know, or like people just as big as that are in this. You would see what the fuck? I can't believe I'm spacing on the name. Portlandia guys.
Fred Armisen.
Like Fred Armisen would be like perfect in this movie, you know?
Oh yeah. It's put him in like the Curtis Armstrong role.
Yeah, like stuff like that. Curtis Armstrong, freaking boogers in this movie. Oh my god, great. I feel like
Wallace Shawn, Curtis Armstrong,
that whole crew is amazing.
Of like 80s comedy character actors who like are the Energy Corporation.
Yeah, they're like the kind of group that's sort of behind. They're also like funding the guy that's running for president, but also mm-hmm. the ones with the Energy Corporation. But they have also ties to the neo-Marxist group, which is basically the Antifa of this movie. Right. It's like
this is my third watch of it. So I sort of, the more I see it, the more like little things I pick up every time, and especially having read the graphic novel and whatever. But they are sort of like pulling the strings for the whole thing. Like there's this, there's the conservative, like the Frost, and then also like his wife runs USAIDINT, which is basically like this jacked up version of the NSA.
Big Brother.
Yeah. And then they're the neo-Marxists on the other side, like the complete polar, like really oppositional forces. But this Energy Corporation Trier, run by Wallace Shawn, is like they're pulling the strings on both sides. They're sort of like pitting mm-hmm. them against each other, which doesn't seem to work because it does get his Meg Zeppelin destroyed and they all die.
Yeah, does the world end like at the end there? Like they totally
this
over.
This is the way the world ends.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Not with a whimper, but with a bang. That's the bang.
So basically, yeah. So what happens is like the guy. I don't even. It's impossible to explain to go with this movie like beat by beat. But
show. Well, if you have any questions for me, I'll try to explain.
Right. So a question. So
okay.
I don't have much. We've kind of already covered it, really. One thing I don't really, it's a little bit over the top for me and kind of feels a little bit Kill Billy is when the leader of the, who's playing that? It's the fucking Rex from Toy Story is the leader of the Energy Corporation. What is his name? Or the
Wallace
inventor?
Shawn. Yeah.
Wallace Shawn has like a Chinese man, like cut his hand off because he,
it's a contract thing. So like Japan was signing a contract to get this liquid karma thing set up there so they could have all the power, like, you know, energy stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they're going over the contract. He's like, okay, I agree. And then he holds out his pinky. They're like, part of the contract apparently is to, he has to lose a finger. Yeah. But then she chops off his whole hand.
Yeah.
And it's because, and this is a great, like, this would be a perfect time to put in a clip of Wallace Shawn screaming this, but he's like, you didn't read the contract. There's like a 6-inch margin of error written into the contract.
You didn't read the contract. That guy's voice, man.
Oh it's God. Incredible.
Let's go through your, like, so you made a ranking of actors that get what movie they're in.
Actors basically. Who get it. Well, I sort of just made a top three because this is what I felt was important.
Yeah, because I feel like going through some of these actors would be like kind of fun because there's so many interesting people in this movie. But let's mm-hmm. see here the top. Let's hear the top three.
All right. Number three. I really like John Larroquette in this movie. He's like the right hand man of Frost, basically.
OK, yes.
He's chief of staff or whatever. And he was on, you know, he was on the West Wing and stuff and Night Court. Like, he's like this 90s comedic character actor. But I think he just really, and he's the one who gets tased in the balls, which is fun.
That's right. That's true. Tased in the balls.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like balls and like jokes and stuff. Like, I feel like could either be funny to you or you hate it kind of thing in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's childish.
Okay, so why him again?
I just think he's a great actor in general. I've always loved him. I found out recently that I thought he was dead for a long time, but I found out that he's not. So I was happy to hear that.
That's cool. That's
relieving
good.
News. I don't know. I just think he sort of is always good at that, like sort of locking into the tone of whatever he's doing.
So what's the tone, do you think? Like, what's the, like, if you had to define it?
I think the people who nail the tone best are the people who know that it's funny what they're saying, like, and ridiculous, but still play it pretty seriously. Like, I mm-hmm. think Justin Timberlake plays, like we were talking before, he plays it only seriously. Like, I don't think he is trying to be funny at all or mm-hmm. like trying to. I don't think he's like reading that in the script that there's any comedy there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the people that I think do it really well aren't like overly, because the Rock will do a thing where he like bugs his eyes out and like puts his fingers together.
Yeah,
and, like,
what do you think about that?
Well, I've got a theory about that.
Okay.
I think it's,
let's make sure we hit all your theories.
I think it is intentional. I think he was asked to do that by, it's in the script probably, because so there's the part where they go see Kevin Smith toward the end on the Mega Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, it's the whole thing where like, I like one of the versions of the Rock is dead and they show him the crushed up body. And they're talking about like, Kevin Smith starts saying something about like, he holds his hand out. He's like one and then another version of you. And then he puts them together and does like that with his hands. He does that when he's talking about like the two different versions of you know, boxer.
Yeah.
So I think he was asked to do that in the script, but it feels like really over the top because there'll be like, there's three or four times where like he gets scared about something or he's like, whoa, and he goes,
yeah, yeah. It's I thought maybe that was like, I was like maybe thinking that's cool that you caught that detail because I'm like, is that his choice to do that? Like, I want to be nervous. So I've never been nervous before.
Yeah,
so I'm
right.
Gonna do this.
That's what I thought it was originally. So, but it was this. Really, it takes three viewings to sort of get a lot of the stuff going.
I can't wait to watch it again. Shit.
Please do. Oh my God. It rocks.
I'm going to watch it with the commentary.
Oh, me too. Yeah. So yeah, I think understanding that these people take what's happening to them very seriously, but the actor knowing that it's like ridiculous and funny, I think that's the key to getting the tone of the movie, which brings me to number two, Miranda Richardson, who plays, I think she's Mrs. Frost. She's like the head of the USIDENT.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're right with this for sure.
So she's always just standing there in front of her monitors, like with all the,
yeah, she doesn't say much. I feel like she should be.
No,
like,
I think she does a lot of good face work though. And she does like, there's a point. Oh, I can't remember. Oh, she's like, she's guiding the like SEAL team that's going into the neo-Marxist compound. And then she's just like, take them out. Like, when it's just people standing there, like, in an apartment building, she just, like, orders executions of all these people in the hall.
And that's where fucking what's his face gets killed. Eli Roth.
Eli Roth. Yeah, right on the bathroom.
He gets killed like fucking Vincent Vega in the bathroom.
Yep. That's probably a reference to that.
It probably is.
Maybe there's a whole backstory with Eli Roth's character that Richard Kelly has in his head.
I bet it is. They're like, all right, so it's like, you know, we're all you're friends with Quentin, or maybe he was at this point, and he's just like, this is kind of a Pulp Fiction-y type of movie a little bit. So
yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could say that.
It's intertwining, you know, fucking stories with a million different characters, but character actors and big actors. How the hell did they get these people to be in this movie? It's so crazy.
Know. It's wild. Yeah. Because Sean William Scott was hot shit then too.
Yeah. But I think he's good too. I like him. I think he's good in the movie.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with him. Like he didn't make my top three, but he's not in the bottom either. Like, I think he does a good job.
I feel like there's a missing thread in his story though, for at least the cut that's currently available.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get like fucking Cody to go out into the wasteland and try to find the director's cut.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
So Cody, if you're listening out there in the wastes, try to put that on the list next to Avatar 2 to find the director's cut of Southland Tales. I'll pay a pretty penny for it.
Hi, Cody.
Yeah. He's good. Yeah, you're right. I think you're right with her. I feel like there's something, I feel like there's like a scene missing with all these characters.
Yeah, I feel like it could definitely, like, I feel like people who don't like it definitely don't feel this way, but I feel like it could use more for a lot of the people. And that's why I think it would work really well in a mini series where, like, you can really just explore these characters for a long time.
And to have like a team of writers instead of like one guy
trying to put this all together. Yeah.
Because you need a whole team to try to figure this movie out. Like, I don't know how he did it by himself or tried to do it by himself, because that's crazy.
Yeah,
like, you need to have a fucking writer's room with like the fucking cards on the wall of each character and their lines and just like.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So who's your number one? I can guess who it is, but
Sarah Michelle Gellar. I mean, she kills
it. She's the best.
She does is perfect. I sent you a video of her. Like staring off into the distance, like very seriously, and then she pulls up an energy drink that just has a picture of her face on it,
and it lines up perfectly with her face.
Oh, it's so good.
It's one of the best like shots in the movie, probably. Yeah,
and just everything she delivers is great. Like there's like the future is, scientists say the future will be much more futuristic than originally predicted. Like every line that she gets is so perfectly delivered. The song is really funny. Teen horniness is not a crime.
Yeah.
Like it's great. Pitch perfect. It completely rocks.
Yeah. So if you're following along, trying to follow this crazy fucking podcast, she's basically, you know, was a stripper a porn star, which has her own TV show, or she's creating a reality TV show.
Right. She has an energy drink. She's trying to branch
she's like
out
the Kim
from
Kardashian
her porn star
or something. Of
yeah.
Like the,
yeah,
which is
pre, I
before
think it was
Kim
before
Kardashian.
That.
Right, yeah,
you know,
it's this movie is like fucking Richard Kelly is Jericho Kane. I would say Richard Kelly, like, like he or who would he be? I don't know. Whoever it is, like, maybe he is Crystal now. It's the movie. Yeah, it's you might think it's on the nose, but I don't know. For some reason, I feel like it was ahead of its time in this weird way.
Yeah, she's got she is a porn star. She wrote that screenplay. She has a like TV reality chat show where they talk about all the serious issues.
But it's like regarding like porn and stuff, though. Like,
well,
like it's,
a lot of it, it's like, oh, I wish I had the quote on me, but it's like the first like five things are like, you know, politics, world affairs, economics, and then it's like teen horniness.
Yeah.
Double penetration, like stuff like that.
One of the things I saw was this is a review I saw on the old school site Letterboxd, and this is actually from like 2013. I actually don't have the name of it listed here, which it said, if we can finally identify a discourse that Kelly appears to be working through, I would argue that his main point is saturation, like the way low culture overtakes high culture in Kiss Me Deadly. I'm not sure what that is, but it is that there's simply too much culture and image to handle here, in the form of all media event. Properly cinematic images are intermixed with barrage of home video footage, internet and cable TV feeds, commercials, simulated CGI environments, especially sequences in which the film's characters are watching all the above on multiple computer screen windows and screens. And I think that the movie is kind of an oversaturation. Maybe that's what he's playing with.
Yeah, and maybe the format of the movie itself, oversaturated, sort of plays into that whole idea.
Yeah, I think so, because we are oversaturated. Like, we just have inner pockets, you know, constant fucking New York Times articles, you know, telling us what the hell's going on in the world, and tweets and trying to keep up with everything. And what's, I don't know, it's so strange. I don't know. This movie's cool.
Are you okay?
I don't know. I'm just like, I just wish that my buddies at this store like appreciated it. This
yeah. Movie. Well, maybe hearing us, hearing, like, I feel like if you hear someone be passionate about something, it's sort of not that it will change your mind, but it allows you to this be able to see what it is they're seeing, like through their eyes, pretty much. I think maybe hearing us be so so excited about it, will, I don't know. Who knows? Fuck them. Yeah. Well, so that review hit on something that I was thinking about too. It, like the whole high low concept, like this high art, low art, high class, low society, whatever. Like, I feel like that dichotomy is very much at play in this. Like, there's, so I sort of alluded to the number 69 earlier, which is like, you know, it's childish to include. That's sort of the low comedy aspect to it. Mm-hmm. But then there's also this higher connection to it. Like, they reference that the only way that Krista now knows, you know, she knows that number only as one thing. In the movie, it's like, that's how many minutes the people were sent back in time. That's that's, it's also the number of the proposition. Proposition 69 was like, allow US ident to control the world or whatever. I don't know, whatever it was. But there's all these things that relate back to that number, which in itself is just a funny number. Like, I don't know. Like, I really like the juxtaposition of sort of that high and low kind of thing. There's also Deep Throat 2. Which is like, mm-hmm. It's a reference to like, oh yeah, that's sort of the whistleblower in the Watergate scandal. Like, Deep Throat, he was, that guy named himself after a pornographic film like of the time. So
it's like the highest grossing pornographic film, I think, or something right. like that.
And so in this movie, the low of it is just like the best that she can think of to name herself as this like, leaking video kind of person is Deep Throat too, and she also happens to be a porn director, and and then they bring it up to Krista now. She says, I wasn't in that one.
Yeah, it's just a great, like, line. Great there, line.
There's so many things that have like there's more than one payoff. Like, a lot of thing, like a typical comedy will have one setup and one payoff, but this sort of like a lot of the literature that I really enjoy takes one thing and sort of comes at it with all these different angles and just sort of like refers back to it in different ways. And in this particularly, like in high and low kind of that dichotomy of coming at it. Like, I think it's really funny and interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's nuts. I can't imagine somebody like seeing this movie once and like kind of like figuring, like just knowing what it is and just know, or no. just
yeah.
That's interesting. Wow. I don't remember her name. I feel bad not knowing, but she was in Poltergeist. She's like the psychic in Poltergeist. Is it Zelda Rubinstein?
Zelda Rubinstein. Yeah.
She's great, and I feel like it's just like, I bet you Richard like grew up watching, you know, fucking Poltergeist and other movies, and needed to have her in the movie.
Right. Then you got Christopher Lambert was like Highlander or something.
Yeah. He's I think he, according to this printout Chad just had, he became internationally famous with Tarzan, a role in Tarzan, and Highlander. You were right. He was Highlander.
It feels like what you're saying with Donnie Darko, where he sort of just threw in everything that he likes. Like, it has, he likes Fight Club, I would guess. Like, there's the duality with the two different people being one person, and then there's also that song from the end that plays during the movie. That Pixies song. And then there's like, yeah, he'll just put in actors, like, comedy character actors.
It's a different Pixies song, but I get it.
Oh, it's a different, you know. Whatever. Sounds the same.
No way. You're thinking, Where's My Mind? And then at fucking Wave of Mutilation. Okay. Two different albums. Get out of here. Whatever. I get it.
Give me a break.
Moby did the soundtrack.
Cut
on
that
this
out.
Too.
Actually, I'm a fucking idiot. All right.
No, I get it. He's probably right, though. He probably heard that. Like, there's interesting song choices with this, too. Like, there's Muse a little bit, which Muse is still popular, but they were definitely big at the time, I feel like, bigger than they are now. But
I think
going
that
for
was
a vibe.
I think that was like pre blow up Muse. Like, I think they sort of became huge after 2007. It was like 2009 was or 2010, I think they were on that Twilight soundtrack. And they had that,
well,
all those huge hits.
The Absolution album came out in 2003, so it was definitely before.
I mean, not to get in the weeds with Muse, but I think Black Holes is the huge one.
Is it?
Like, Absolution was big, but yeah, the next one really blew up.
Yeah, and so like Moby did the soundtrack. There's a Blur song in the end credits, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah, it's kind of just like the 90s alternative, you know, to early 2000s alternative soundtrack where, like, you know, Donnie Darko was really... in
mostly
alternative 80s.
Well, it was it took place in the 80s, so it made sense to
that's true
have it only
so
be
it's
that
kind of like he's kind of definitely trying to get a certain time period and stuff, and I don't know,
the sort of just smaller roles, like the 20 like tiny roles in this movie, he just fills with so many, like, you know, SNL cast members from the time, or like 80s stars washed up, or like directors Kevin Smith and Eli Roth, he'll just toss them in there.
Yeah, having Mandy Moore and Justin Timberlake, I feel like both kind of came around the same time, like they're when they got famous. So Sean William Scott and Sarah Michelle Gellar kind of go together for me, I feel like.
Yeah,
like
those
two
are
actors.
Very of the time, like probably like could have easily been studio notes, like, hey, why don't you get some popular actors from right now.
Yeah, but they weren't really in these type of movies, for one thing. Like, Stifler?
I mean...
Is that your first...
You know, there's no... these type of movies... Is this only this movie? Type of movie.
True. Will Sasso?
Yeah, that one's weird. That's the one where... That's, like, the one role where I'm like, I wish someone else played that.
You know what? Him and, like, the guys he, like, hangs out with, like, there's, like, kind of, like, these punk-looking
the Mohawk
dudes
guy
from, like, from, like, an 80s... like they all look like bullies or like bad guys from like an 80s movie. And what is their deal? That was something I wanted to see if explained.
I think they were so Will Sasso's character, he was the one who picked Boxer up from the desert.
Okay.
And then he sort of for a while gets really into the screenplay. He's like reading the screenplay. They're like talking about making him a producer on the movie and like in exchange for him helping to get Boxer from the desert. But then I think it turns out in the movie later, much later, that he's been working for Trier all along, like the energy corporation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he was sort of their mole in the neo-Marxists somehow. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Everybody's connected.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like
totally.
There's not like one character basically that's not connected.
Except for that
something.
One, the gangster guy who it just shows up at the end and then is like integral to the plot. Like that's the one thing I just don't know where he comes from.
Can we try to figure this out or not? Is it just not
possible?
I don't
know. I don't know if it's there. Like there's, I really don't know.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's like, well, it's fucking, what was that movie with, gosh, it was like a white rapper movie that came out like around this time, probably, or before.
With like Jamie Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy. Yeah. What was that called? He's straight out of this from that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Something to do with like Miami. I don't know.
Chad, can you figure this out for us? Malibu's Most Wanted. Thank you, Chad.
Malibu. Yeah,
you were close with Miami.
I remember that movie being on TV a lot, and I would just sort of catch pieces of it, and I was like, "Yeah, I don't need to watch this."
Maybe maybe it just need to be played by somebody else, someone more a little bit more charismatic or something.
Maybe I even like that actor. I think, like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen him in other things, but I don't dislike what he's doing at all. Like, I just don't feel like his puzzle piece fits in with the rest of it.
He's like a puzzle from another. That got into your box somehow from a different puzzle, really.
Maybe
that's the idea. Maybe that's the case. Like, he's the one, the disruption that causes, that blows up the thing.
Okay. Hey, that's something.
Yeah. So why an ice cream truck? Do they have any ideas or theories about that?
No.
Was it like fate that like they...
I think it has something to do with like the... again, this would be really like reading into it. But the guy sells guns out of the ice cream truck. Like, the idea of like making guns seem fun, cool to kids. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe that's in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my only really thought with that. But even that, I don't care too much to dig into that particular of it.
I'm just wondering why it floats up. And like, I mean, I guess like
the two people are meeting, the two bodies with one soul are shaking hands, and so that's what creates the gravitational
it's thing. Like an anomaly that happens
so it just makes whatever they're doing float. I think you're right, like by the end it's sort of just like, okay, like there's like battle in the streets, they're shaking hands and the truck is flying and they shoot the missile at the mega zeppelin.
Yeah, and the Rock and like his two like women in his life are dancing with him
together.
Like, why? Like, they just kind of are, they know it's the end of the world, I guess, kind of maybe, and maybe. Just kind of
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like the ending could have been landed a little harder, but you know.
That last hour, last 45 minutes or something, that's when it just like it, you're balancing all these things. And for me, I know a lot of people probably aren't, but like, I feel like I'm able to keep it up. Like, I'm like, all right, here we go. And then it all starts tumbling down. And I'm like, oh no.
Oh no. What's going on? Yeah.
And I wish it landed it, but like, it doesn't make me hate it. I just kind of like, wish it kind of.
Yeah. Like I think there are definitely, you know, we've never said this was a perfect film.
Never.
Never. We wouldn't. By the way, do you know Janine Garofalo was cut from the movie?
Oh yeah, I saw her pop up at the very like last shot of the movie. Yes. Basically, it's like the second to last shot.
Like, she's like dancing in a crowd or something, or like there's just a bunch of people around.
Perfect person to be in this movie.
Yeah,
perfect.
And she looks good. Her look in it too is awesome.
God, Cody, please try to find this movie. We need to
find the can cut. We need it.
We need to see it. I know that in 2019, it was screening in places. I think it was like, it was like doing special screenings of it. So maybe it's out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. You know?
This movie, it's a good one. Watch half of it. Stop, think about it, watch the next half the next day. It's like,
I mean, like you would with a miniseries. Like, you don't watch all the episodes at once. You know,
it's like Chernobyl, you know.
yeah exactly like that. Starts with a nuclear meltdown,
exactly, and just the world goes to shit and never recovers really. And do you have any other little things you wanted to touch on?
I feel like we've covered it. I feel like if you listen to this episode, you have 1/3 of an idea about what this movie is.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think if we even like made sense.
No, I'm sure it didn't. But you know, honestly, it was fun for
us. It's kind of like this movie, you know.
It's an acquired taste.
I think that's probably the best way to review this movie. It is definitely an acquired taste, and it's fun. I think you said it earlier. It's a fun movie to like. I think.
Yeah, it is just really fun to like it.
it's not, I don't think it's some hipster bullshit to like this movie. You know, I think there's something there. There's something to grasp onto.
Totally.
So yeah, Richard Kelly, I mean, since this movie, he's had one other movie that he's directed.
Yeah.
And that was The Box. And I actually had never seen The Box. Never seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's on like, I think it's on like several streaming services right now.
Oh, well, I'll have to like go back in the archives of the store and it might be back there somewhere. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You I'm sure it is. That was when I remember we traded screening passes when those were out.
What do you mean?
Do you remember this?
No.
I had a screening for A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie, that I couldn't make it that night. And so I gave it to you and you were like, well, I've got this one for The Box. We could trade. And then, so yeah, I saw it early and then I didn't see A Serious Man for years. And then I guess the same thing happened to you, but at least A Serious Man was good.
So we've known each other before? This isn't our first meeting?
I gotta go.
Who are you? I don't, this is crazy. You're a mysterious man, Eric. You're a mysterious man.
Well,
I don't know where you came from.
Just over there.
Well, is there anything else left to say? I feel like there's so much that we need to say, but
well,
you can't. I think
the one last thing that has to be said is that I'm a pimp and pimps don't commit suicide.
So, yeah, that's Southland Tales. I guess thanks for stopping by, Eric. I'm just curious. Do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, well, I have I don't know. I don't want to plug anything.
Are you sure?
Maybe not right now.
I thought I heard that you have an album coming out and the Wastelanders might want to hear it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's coming out soon. I clicked it on the website to like post my album and it's sort of just sitting there. And I don't know if it's going to go on, but it's out there.
Oh.
Probably it'll be out.
All right, well,
by the time this comes out in the future. I mean, now.
Okay. If you want to check out Eric, it's Eric Smooth, his music. But I just want to tell everyone on the Wasteland out there just to remember to rate, review, and subscribe. This is Apocalypse Video signing off.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for having me on your podcast. But
I
better get back to the foreign film section. I think I left something over there.
All right. Well, I'll be right over there if you need help looking for any other movies.
Thanks. See you later.
Well, Chad, hopefully Dave doesn't mind I record an episode without. The hell was that?
My scanners report that there's been some sort of time anomaly in the vicinity of the store.
Oh. Okay. Oh, shit. Gotta poop. Bye!